See, in the last two messages, of course, this is Know Thine Enemy, Part 12. In the last two messages, we have been doing an examination of the New Age movement, most specifically in the last two messages, in light of what we find in the Scriptures. Now, this old movement of apostasy, if you allow me to call it that, because that certainly fits the bill or describes the New Age movement much better than the term the New Age movement. It is, in essence, the old religion of apostasy through and through. This old movement of apostasy can be found in the Scriptures, at least partially, in at least three different ways, and that we've basically went over them to some degree in the last two messages. First of all, in man's initial rebellion in the Garden of Eden. Secondly, in man's tendency to be multi-religious, and you can just call that idolatry. Man's tendency to be idolatrous. And keep in mind that a true description of idolatry is nothing more than self-worship. It's creating gods that will dictate to you what you want to do and teach and believe. That's all it is. It is simply self-worship. And of course, that's what humanism and New Ageism is through and through. Again, first of all, we can find it in at least partially in the Scriptures in man's rebellion in the Garden of Eden. Secondly, in man's tendency to be multi-religious. And thirdly, and I believe most specifically, in the building of the Tower of Babel, or I would like to use, I think probably better translated, better understood, in the building of the Tower of Babylon. And if you remember, those two words are simply, they come from the same identical Hebrew word. It can be translated Babel or Babylon. Now, at the Tower of Babylon, there is no question that man's plans, that which he had, the goals that he had in mind there, in unison together, were temporarily thwarted at the Tower of Babylon, if you'll again permit me. Only, I believe, to be resumed again at a later time with renewed intensity in and through the New Age movement, which is certainly a part of what we find in Revelation 17 called Mystery Babylon. Now, I don't believe the New Age movement and Mystery Babylon are synonymous through and through. In other words, I don't believe that the New Age movement or that the Mystery Babylon consists of the New Age movement only. I believe the New Age movement is just one aspect of Mystery Babylon, and I don't think any of you would probably have a problem with that, but I want to make sure that's understood. Now, again, I believe that the New Age movement is just a new intensity of trying to accomplish what they had tried to accomplish at an earlier time, at the building of the Tower of Babel. No question that you can find implications of this old religious apostasy in the Scriptures. There's certainly much more than I'm sure that we even touched upon. Certainly there in the Scriptures. I want to leave that now, though, and I want to look at the dangers of New Ageism for us today. Now, again, this probably, at this point already, could probably go without being mentioned. It's probably at least some of the dangers of New Ageism or the New Age movement are certainly obvious to us. But let me just touch on a couple things. First of all, as humanism, as we mentioned in past messages, as humanism is the primary religion being taught to our young people in and through the public school system, New Ageism is fast becoming the religion being taught to the adult world today. And of course, they're nearly one and the same. It's just greater emphasis, a greater attack, you could even say, through the New Age movement. But again, as humanism is the primary religion being taught to our young people, New Ageism is now fast becoming, the primary religion being taught to the adult world today. Companies such as Ford, Westinghouse, Calvin Klein, and Ma Bell are just a few of many companies today who are sending their employees to New Age teaching or classes, training. They are involved in it through and through. I met a man in Aurora when I was still with the church in Aurora who had been asked to go to that. Matter of fact, I guess he went ahead and went to it as a Christian just to see what was going on, and it was New Age through and through. He worked for Mountain Bell at the time. And Mountain Bell was taking all of their supervisors and sending them to this New Age training. It's happening throughout the United States, throughout the world. That is happening, and much of the time unbeknownst to the rest of the populace. They do not realize how great a movement this is, how much they are on track of what they want to do, that they're on the move. They are an army on the move. And again, as I mentioned in last week's message, we haven't heard a whole lot about the New Age movement or near as much about the New Age movement since December 31st, 1986. But as I proved to you, they're even more intense and more on the move than they were at that time. It's just not being announced. They got the publicity they wanted then. Now they are doing it more quietly and yet still accomplishing their goal. So let's not think that they are no longer a threat. We'll see that they certainly are as we continue on. As a result of the adult world today, the leaders, most specifically the leaders of the adult world today, being taught or being receiving New Age training, we are seeing its effect. The effects of it are being felt in every sphere of life, whether it be medicine, politics, science, entertainment, psychology, education, or religion. We are seeing it come out everywhere. Sometimes it's there to be seen, and I think they'll become more bold again as things continue, as they take more and more control. But sometimes it's even there without our even noticing it, because we are becoming brainwashed, desensitized to what they are doing today. Now, all of that, I believe, is important. That is a tremendous danger in the world today. But for the Christian, I believe that is almost the least of his worries. As Christians, as we are Christians, I believe it's almost the least of our worries. Because the New Agers' primary goal in their globalist pursuits is the destruction of not just Christianity, but of specifically of Christians themselves. They do not intend just to try to stop the religion of Christianity. They intend to do that. But how they intend to do it is by destroying Christians themselves. Let me share with you a quote from Barbara Marx Hubbard, and if you remember, she was one of the key promoters of the December 31st, 1986 World Peace Event. She also is the author of the unpublished manuscript entitled The Book of Co-Creation. Okay, and I'm going to quote part of throughout this message from that particular manuscript that, again, is not in the hands of very many people today. This is what she says, or at least in part of it. Quote, "We, the elders." Now, I might just at this point ask you to think about who would these elders be that she talks about. She doesn't go on to explain, but you might put that in the back of your mind and ask yourself, well, who is she speaking of when she speaks of we the elders? She says, "We the elders have been patiently waiting until the very last moment before the quantum transformation to take action to cut out this corrupted and corrupting element in the body of humanity." I might stop there and just ask if you might, for you to think of who that certainly might be today. Who is she speaking about, this corrupt and corrupting element in the body of humanity today? Well, it's anyone who doesn't agree with their goals as is lined out with the New Age movement. And I might ask you, well, who is that? Well, it's anyone who would tend to be a separatist or a non-pluralist, because you cannot be a part of the New Age movement without being a pluralist. That is the corrupting element in the body of humanity in their minds. She goes on, she said, it is like watching a cancer grow. Something must be done before the whole body is destroyed. A little bit later she picks up and she says, the destructive one-fourth must be eliminated from the social body. Destroyed and eliminated is her language. In another book, in a book entitled Happy Birthday Planet Earth by Barbara Marx Hubbard, page 32, she threatens with these words, "People will either change or die. That is the choice." Now, that's probably enough to convince anyone of some of their plans, but let me share one other quote from you from another man, John Randolph Price, who we've also discussed in previous messages. Again, if you remember, he is the head of the Planetary Commission, and the man who first conceived the idea of the December 31st, 1986 World Instant of Cooperation. That's his mind child, if I can call it that. Now, I'm going to actually be quoting from a book entitled Mystery Mark of the New Age by Tex Mars, and he's addressing this situation, since I didn't have the book in my hands that he quoted from. Quoting from Mystery Mark of the New Age, he says, John Randolph Price says that his own spirit guide, whose name is Asher, has warned that if these annual world events do not magically succeed in healing, purifying, and cleansing the world, a great calamity will befall mankind. There will be a rage and violent action, Asher confides, and the people will reject the new age. The people who reject the new age, quote, will experience the greatest emotion of fear and panic, end quote. The horrible end result of all the casualties, 2.5 billion men, women, and children will be killed, end quote. And this basically was compiled from John Randolph Price's book, Practical Spirituality. That certainly sounds like practical spirituality, does it not? Pages 15 through 21. You know, there is no question that they have the intention, and I could quote a whole lot of other sources, other leaders in the New Age movement that verify that same thing, and they all come up with about the same figure. Very interesting, 2 billion to 2.5 billion people to be wiped out. Well, how do they intend to do that? Well, of course, you probably know that their main thrust, their intention, their way of doing it is through what we know as Global 2000. Let me share with you again the quote from Mike Kitch of Zero Population Growth, Inc., who, of course, is a primary supporter of Global 2000. He says, quote, "We have to make people accept some difficult choices as inevitable. Global 2000 says that if they want the good life, we are going to have fewer people alive in the year 2000 than anyone dreamed possible," end quote. Now, I don't know if you have caught, last two messages when we've talked about Global 2000, or as I read that to you here again this morning, I don't believe if you caught the impact of what they are really saying. They intend to wipe out 2 billion plus people, now catch this, in the next 10 years. I mean, that doesn't usually register with us. It's 1990, folks. There's 10 years left before the year 2000. They intend somehow in the next 10 years to wipe out up to 2.5 billion people. And let me ask you, who do you think is their main targets? Well, let me prove it to you. Global 2000 fanatic Stephen Munford in the Humanist magazine, January-February 1981, says this, quote, "Our epic will certainly see the end of the disease of Christianity," end quote. We are the primary targets. They intend to wipe us out. We either, as Barbara Marx Hubbard said, we will either change or die. At least that's their plans. I certainly have other plans. I tend to be a survivalist myself, and I intend to survive their Holocaust. I hope you do too. Now, that last quote, that last statement, should certainly start to alert you that who is behind New Ageism today. The very fact that they want to destroy, that their main target, their main objective is to wipe out Christianity and Christians themselves. It should start to clue you in on who's behind humanism as well as New Ageism. Well, I want to devote the rest of the message to that point. And of course, this is the main thrust of this whole series. And that is to take a look at who indeed is behind New Ageism. And I can just hear somebody after going into the series, maybe initially, maybe partway through it, maybe at this point, somebody probably saying, "You're not going to tell me that the Jews are behind New Ageism too, are you? You know, are they behind everything? Are they hiding behind every rock?" Well, let's let the proof be in the pudding, so to speak. Let's see if it's not there to be found out. You decide whether I can make that kind of statement in this regard. Whether Henry Ford was really right in what he said back in the 1920s. Let's first look at, in regards to looking at who's behind New Ageism, let's first look at New Ageism as an extension, again, of humanism. We know that that's what New Ageism is. Again, it's just an extension of humanism. Now, if you remember in past messages as we discussed humanism, we found that humanism equals communism. They have the same people involved in the same kind of goals. Humanism equals communism. They even admit to it. Humanism equals a communism. In that light, I think you'll find this interesting. The Esalen Institute, which is regarded as the mother church of New Age ideas, regularly hosts Soviet social scientists. That's one of their just regular habits, is to simply bring in Soviet social scientists and let them do the speaking. Why would they do that? And we're talking about the New Age movement here. New Age, again, is an extension of humanism, which we saw is equal with communism. And, of course, communism, in past messages before that, we saw that communism equals Judaism. And thus, simple arithmetic calculation, I guess it wouldn't be arithmetic calculation, but simple deduction. If all of that is the case, which I think has certainly been proven in past messages, then New Ageism equals Judaism. I could stop right there and let it be at that. It certainly can be proven. But let me prove that particular point a little bit more so. Again, from the standpoint that New Ageism is simply an extension of humanism, that humanism equals communism, that communism equals Judaism, and thus New Ageism equals Judaism, and I think this will further prove this point. I want to read to you from the September 10th, 1920 issue of the American Hebrew. In other words, literature written by and from the Jews. The American Hebrew, September 10th, 1920, it says, quote, "The Bolshevik Revolution in Russia was the work of Jewish brains, of Jewish dissatisfaction, of Jewish planning." Now, what were they saying in that part of the quote? They were saying communism is Judaism. Judaism is communism. Plain as a bell. Let me start that again and then carry it on through the rest of the quote. It says, "The Bolshevist revolution in Russia was the work of Jewish brains, of Jewish dissatisfaction, of Jewish planning, whose goal is to create a new order in the world." What's one of the key phrases? And I remember I mentioned to you, I think in last week's or two messages past, to really key in on this term. What is one of the key terms of the New Age movement? A new world order. They use that over and over and over all the time. Here it says, "whose goal is to create a new order in the world. What was performed in so excellent a way in Russia shall also, through the same Jewish mental and physical forces, become a reality all over the world." Basically, what we have in that statement is that communism equals Judaism, which equals New Ageism, a new world order idea. Secondly, I want to look at who's behind communism by doing a comparison of New Ageism and Judaism in some of their theology and some of their actions. First of all, I want to do a comparison between New Ageism with Judaism by looking at the goal of a one united world that New Ageism carries through and throughout their philosophy. Keeping in mind that New Ageism is simply an extension of humanism, let me quote to you from the Humanist Manifesto 2, tenet number 12 once again. Because it really could not probably be said any better, and there's not a New Age person alive that wouldn't accept this as a part of their philosophy. Humanist Manifesto number 2, tenet number 12, part of it reads, quote, "We deplore the division of humankind on natural, nationalistic grounds. The best option is to transcend the limits of national sovereignty and to move toward the building of a world community." Now, I want you to really listen to what's being said here, because I'm going to share another quote with you. And I think that if you listen to what's said here, you'll see a great similarity. I'm going to start again because I want you to pay attention to what's being said here. Quote, "We deplore the division of humankind on nationalistic grounds. The best option is to transcend the limits of national sovereignty and to move toward the building of a world community." A little later it picks up and says, "Thus we look to the development of a system of world law and a world order based upon transnational federal government. We thus affirm a commitment to the building of a world community," end quote. Now, I want you to compare. That's New Ageism, humanism and New Ageism through and through in their philosophy. Now, compare what I just read you with this next statement that comes from Baruch Levi as he wrote a letter to Karl Marx. And this was as quoted in the La Revue de Paris, page 574, June 1st, 1928, so you know of its source. Listen to what Baruch Levi wrote to Karl Marx. He says, quote, "The Jewish people as a whole will be its own Messiah. It will attain world dominion by the dissolution of the other races, by the abolition of frontiers, the annihilation of monarchy, and by the establishment of a world republic in which the Jews will everywhere exercise the privilege of citizenship. In this new world order, the children of Israel," and of course he's speaking about the Jews, not the true descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. He says, "In this new world order, the children of Israel will furnish all of the leaders without encountering opposition. The government of the different peoples forming the world republic will fall without difficulty into the hands of the Jews. It will then be possible for the Jewish rulers to abolish private property and everywhere to make use of the resources of the state. Thus will the promise of the Talmud be fulfilled, in which it is said that when the Messianic time has come, the Jews will have all the property of the whole world in their hands." End quote. Now, some of that, of course, wasn't said in Humanist Manifesto number 2. But the whole intent, the whole impact is right there in Baruch Levi's letter to Karl Marx. There's just some unsaid things mentioned, or not mentioned, in Humanist Manifesto number 2. Let me read you another one that's also interesting in the same light. This comes from the Jewish World, February 9th, 1883. Quote, "The great ideal of Judaism is that the whole world shall be imbued with Jewish teachings, and that in a universal brotherhood of nations, a greater Judaism, in fact, all the separate races and religions shall disappear." That, again, is the goal, or at least part of the goal, of the New Age movement. I don't know about you, but I'd have a hard time believing that the same mindset didn't create the goals for each of the two groups. I want to also look at one more comparison. I want to compare one more aspect between Judaism and New Ageism today. And that is in their plans. We've already discussed this briefly, but also in their plans to destroy Christianity. Let me start again with a quote from Barbara Marx Hubbard, again from the book of from her book, The Book of Creation. She says, a little bit later after what I already read you, she says, quote, I guess this goes back to where we started. "We the elders," let's identify who the elders are here. "We the elders have been patiently waiting until the very last moment before the quantum transformation to take action to cut out this corrupted and corrupting element in the body of humanity," end quote. Now, let me just ask, who are the elders that she speaks of? First of all, I want you to keep in mind that Barbara Marx Hubbard herself is a Jew. She is a Jew. Who are the elders she speaks of? Well, let me suggest to you that they are the learned elders of Zion, the learned elders of the protocols. And if you don't want to accept that, I'm suggesting it to you, but if you don't want to accept it, let me read to you from the protocols and see if it doesn't fit in. This is from Protocol 17, Article number 2. Quote, "We have long past taken care to discredit the priesthood of the Goyim, and thereby to ruin their mission on earth, which in these days might still be a great hindrance to us. Day by day, its influence on the peoples of the world is falling lower. Freedom of conscience has been declared everywhere, so that now only years divide us from the moment of the complete wrecking of the Christian religion." End quote. Who are they? Who are the elders? I don't think there's any doubt. She knows who they are. And I think this next quote even makes it more clear. Again from Barbara Marx Hubbard a little bit later after she wrote that initial quote. She says, quote, "Fortunately, you, dearly beloveds..." Now, who are the dearly beloveds she is talking about? Well, fellow New Agers. She says, "Fortunately, you, dearly beloveds, are not responsible for this act." Now, let me ask you, is the New Age movement made up of only Jewish people, people of the race of Jews, or people of the religion of Judaism? Certainly not. Like anything, they have their dupes, or as I mentioned last week, their dopes. So she's talking about these other fellow New Agers. Keep that in mind as we're reading this. Again, "Fortunately, you dearly beloveds are not responsible for this act. We are Who are the we? The elders. She is Jewish, keep in mind. We are in charge of God's selection process for the planet Earth. He selects. And I want you to key in this next two words very keenly. And she says, we destroy. She goes on, we are the riders of the pale horse death. We, again the elders, come to bring death to those who are unable to know God. We do this for the sake of the world. End quote. Now she says, the rest of you out there aren't responsible for this act. There are some elders who are responsible for this act. Who are the elders? You don't want to believe that it's the elders of the protocols? Well, let's listen to some other Jewish quotes. How about Maurice Samuel in the book You Gentiles, page 155, written in 1924? Listen, keen back to that phrase that she used. We, quote, we Jews, we the destroyers, will remain destroyers forever. Nothing that you will do will meet our needs and demands. We will forever destroy because we need a world of our own. End quote. One world. They want it all. One world order that they control. And they are the destroyers. How about another one? Oscar Levi. He says, quote, we Jews who have posed as the saviors of the world, we are today nothing else but the world's seducers, its destroyers, its incendiaries, its executioners, end quote. How about another one? You want another one? Let's give you another one. Bernard Lazare in Anti-Semitism, page 350, says this, quote, the Jew is not satisfied with de-Christianizing. He Judaizes. He destroys Catholic or Protestant faith. He provokes indifferences, but he imposes his idea of the world, of morals, and of life upon those whose faith he ruins. He works at his age-old task, the annihilation of the religion of Christ. End quote. They are the destroyers. They admit it themselves. You don't want to believe it? Well, let me verify it from God Himself. Let's go to the Scriptures. Turn with me to Matthew chapter 23. Matthew chapter 23, and starting with verse 29. Now, keep in mind that Barbara Marx Hubbard, one of the key promoters, one of the key leaders of the New Age movement, says that she and others are the destroyers. The destroyers of what? The destroyers of Christianity, the destroyers of God's people, the destroyers of the saints, however you want to look at it, however you want to label it. They are the destroyers of the saints of God. Okay? I give you three quotes from Jews who admit the very same thing, who say, we are the destroyers. Now, let's see who God identifies as the destroyers, the annihilators of Christians. Matthew chapter 23, starting with verse 29, it says, woe to you, scribes, and Pharisees, and hypocrites. Now, let me ask you, who is he speaking of here? Jews, those participating or practicing the religion of Judaism. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you build the tombs of the prophets and adorn the monuments of the righteous, and say, if we had been living in the days of our fathers, we would not have been partners with them in shedding the blood of the prophets. Consequently, you bear witness against yourselves that you are sons of those who murdered the prophets. Fill up, then, the measure of the guilt of your fathers. You serpents, you brood of vipers, how shall you escape the sentence of hell? Boy, how anti-Semitic that sounds. Can you believe he said that? You serpents, you brood of vipers. And he's talking about Jews. How dare him? My. Oh, well, we'll just have to accept what he says, I guess. You serpents, you brood of vipers, how shall you escape the sentence of hell? Therefore, behold, I am sending you prophets and wise men and scribes. Some of them you will kill and crucify, and some of them you will scourge in your synagogues and persecute from city to city, that upon you may fall the guilt of all the righteous blood shed on earth, from the blood of righteous Abel to the blood of Zechariah, the son of Berechiah, whom you murdered between the temple and the altar. Let's just end with there. Notice again verse 35, and upon you may fall the guilt of all the righteous blood shed on the earth, from the blood of righteous Abel to the blood of Zechariah, the son of Berechiah, whom you murdered between the temple and the altar. Who does he put the blame upon? Well, people, it's not the Canaanites to begin with, like so many of our brethren want to try to point it on. Actually, this statement is regarding Israelites in this case. But keep in mind that it says that those who were proselyted into the faith by Israel to begin with, by those who were practicing Judaism from the Talmud that came out of the Babylonian captivity, that the proselyters became twice the sons of hell as the proselytizers. What we have amongst us today, following the religion of Judaism, are twice as bad, in other words, according to that scripture, than what even Christ faced here at his day and age. At this time, these people were responsible, and I think we'll see as we continue that it has not changed at all. That goes back looking in time, looking back to all the prophets and all of those of Israel who were godly men, who were martyred. It was at the hands of those who practiced Judaism. Okay, let's see if it doesn't even carry on farther. In light of that, I want you to remember from past messages that New Ageism compares with the Tower of Babel, that Babel equals Babylon, that Babylon begot the daughter of Babylon, which is equal with Edom, which is found in modern Jewry today, and that the daughter of Babylon is one and the same with mystery Babylon today, whose aim is to destroy Christianity, as we found out in the last message from Revelation chapter 17. Now turn with me to Revelation chapter 18. Again in Matthew 23, the blame of the death of God's people previous to the time of that writing was placed on those who practiced the religion of Judaism. Revelation 17, it talks about mystery Babylon and that she is warring against the Lamb and, of course, those who would follow the Lamb. In Matthew 18, look at verse 21 to begin with, and it says, "A strong angel took up a stone like a great millstone and threw it into the sea, saying, 'Thus will Babylon, the great city, be thrown down with violence and will not be found any longer.'" Now, we can see the victory that's obviously going to come about, that there are the plans of those who are part of mystery Babylon will certainly be foiled. That's not the point of my bringing this out at this time. The point is I want you to see who's being addressed, and that it is Babylon, the city of Babylon, in this case, mystery Babylon. Of course, old Babylon has long time been destroyed and disappeared. He's talking about Babylon, and look at verse 24. And it says, In her was found the blood of prophets and of saints and all who have been slain on the earth. Talking about an end time, mystery Babylon, and it says, in her was found all of the blood of the prophets and the saints and all of those who have been slain on the earth. Now, isn't that the same thing that was attributed to the scribes and Pharisees back in Matthew 23? Talking about Jews, those who practiced the religion of Judaism. Now, we either have a dichotomy between these two passages. In Matthew 23, Christ says, looking at the Jews, saying, "You are responsible for all the blood of the prophets and the saints." And yet here in Revelation chapter 17 or 18, he says that it's mystery Babylon who's responsible. There's either a dichotomy or they're one and the same. It hasn't changed. They admit it. I read you three quotes from the Jews who admit, "We are the destroyers." I mean, they don't have to have just Christ blame them. They admit it themselves. They know who they are. They admit it. And just in case they didn't, Christ made it as clear as it could be. They are the ones who are out to destroy Christianity. You know, Judaism certainly stands behind the New Age movement. These two passages pinpoint it. The New Age movement intend to kill Christians. But who is the blame put upon? Mystery Babylon. Jews. Those who practice Judaism. New Age, at least those, the elders who are responsible for the act, have to be those involved in the religion of Judaism, either by race or by proselytization into the faith. One of the two. Is that clear? I didn't say that quite as well as I would have liked to have, but I hope you can see how it comes all together. There can be no question that New Ageism in that comparison is one and the same as Judaism today. Now, I want to look at Judaism and New Ageism together in one more, compare them together in one more manner. And I hope that I can. There's a lot of material to go through in this, in the rest of the the time that we have in this message. A lot of material to cover, and I hope that I can bring it across as clearly as I have it in my mind, which isn't the clearest yet. But I believe that God has opened some doors for me to see some things that I haven't seen in the past, and I hope that you'll pick up on this. I think, again, that you'll find it very interesting. I want to look at Judaism and New Ageism as seen in the mark of the beast. Now, I want to begin with, in this next section, in showing the who's behind the scenes as far as New Ageism is concerned, seen and looking at Judaism and New Ageism again as seen in the mark of the beast, I want to begin by looking at five different scriptures. And I just want to link them together, and then we're going to go back through those scriptures and spend a little bit more time on each one of them. Let's start with Revelation chapter 13. This, of course, is the passage that we have in the book of Revelation concerning the mark of the beast. Revelation chapter 13 and verse 18. It says, "Here is wisdom. Let him who understands calculate the number of the beast. For the number is that of a man, and his number is 666. Now, let me, by a show of hands here, how many have had trouble with that passage, trying to figure out how to figure that the number of the beast? Some of you are honest, some of you are either shy, or some of you are dishonest. I think probably all of us have really wondered about that. And it says, let him who has understanding calculate. It's not something that's just easily seen. And people have come up with all kinds of scenarios on who this number applies to. You know, years ago when I first became a Christian, I heard that it was Latinos. If you take Latinos and give the numerical sums of each of those letters, you'll come up with 666, and Latinos was the father of the Latins, and the Latins have to do with the Catholic Church, and so the Catholic Church is obviously the beast, and that's his number. I've heard later that it obviously was John F. Kennedy, and that he was going to resurrect from the fatal wound to the head that he received. Now, he was his name Kennedy would also equal 666. I've seen the Kissingers can be totaled to be 666. Well, I'm going to throw in another one into the pot here. And I'll let you take it for what it's worth, and you can judge whether it's got validity or not. But I think you'll at least find it very interesting, at least in some regards. One thing that I want you to note out of this verse, Revelation chapter 13 and verse 18. Again, he says, "Let him who understands calculate the number of the beast, for the number is that of a man." Now, I want you to focus in on that, and we're going to use that to propel us back to another, or take us back to another passage. Turn to 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. Remember that the number is that of a man. 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, starting with verses 3 and 4. It says, "Let no one in any way deceive you, for it will not come unless the apostasy comes first, and the man of lawlessness." Revelation 13:18, the number is that of a man. "Let no one in any way deceive you, for it will not come unless the apostasy comes first, and the man of lawlessness is revealed, the son of destruction, who opposes and exalts himself above every so-called god or object of worship, so that he takes his seat in the temple of God, displaying himself as being God." Now, a couple things I want you to notice out of these two passages. First of all, that it talks about the man of lawlessness and the son of destruction, and that this man, put quotes around the word man at this time. Now, we normally want to take that and probably apply it literally to one man. I'm going to at least want you to put a question mark behind that interpretation of the word or the phrase man of destruction here. But this man of destruction, whatever or whoever he is, says that he displays himself as being God. Big clue. The number is that of a man. The man of lawlessness, who or whatever he is, displays himself as being God. Jump down to verse 7. It says, "For the mystery of lawlessness," we've been talking about the man of lawlessness here, it says, "For the mystery of lawlessness is already at work. Only he who now restrains will do so until he is taken out of the way." Okay, now, I want to use that passage. Notice in verse 7 that it says, "The mystery of lawlessness is already at work. Only he who now restrains will do so until he is taken out of the way. Notice that it says the mystery of lawlessness is already at work. Now, I want to use that phrase in verse 7, the mystery of lawlessness is already at work, to take us to 1 John chapter 4 and verse 3. 1 John chapter 4 and verse 3, leaning right now on the phrase, the mystery of lawlessness is already at work. Notice verse 3, and it says, "And every spirit that does not confess Yahshua is not from God, and this is," and notice, you should probably have the word spirit, the next time the word spirit is used here, in italics. In other words, it was not in the original. Again, verse 3, and it's if you put the word spirit in there, it certainly clouds what's really being said. It really leads to the popular doctrine of the one man antichrist doctrine that we have prevalent in most of Judeo-Christianity. Let's read it without it. It says, "And every spirit that does not confess Yahshua is not from God, and this is of the Antichrist, of which you have heard that it is coming, and now is already in the world." Notice if you leave the word spirit, the spirit of the Antichrist, of course, was there at that time. No, it's saying this, not the spirit. This is of the Antichrist which is here already in the world. The Antichrist that everybody's looking to be one man down the road because of them inserting the word spirit here. According to John, was then already in the world. It was, and there's no question. It was in existence. The Antichrist was in existence at the time of John's writing this epistle. Been in the world for some time, as a matter of fact. For a long time, for centuries. Now, notice here, taking our mind back to 2 Thessalonians, it says, "The mystery of lawlessness, which is already at work," and here it says, of the Antichrist, which you have heard that it is coming, and now is already in the world. So there's some synonymous there. We're talking about the man of lawlessness, the son of destruction, and here the Antichrist. Both were already at work in the world. And I think the two are probably like this. Hand in hand, synonymous, one and the same. Now we've gone from the man of lawlessness now to the Antichrist. Now that we're with the Antichrist here, let's look at a description of the Antichrist as found, first of all, in 1 John chapter 2 and verse 22. And it says, "Who is the liar but the one who denies that Yahshua is the Christ? This is the Antichrist, the one who denies the Father and the Son. Whoever denies the Son does not have the Father, and the one who confesses the Son has the Father also." First John chapter 2 and verse 22, it says again, "Who is the liar but the one who denies that Yahshua is the Christ? This is the Antichrist, the one who denies the Father and the Son." Now let's go over to 2 John and verse 7, or chapter 7 if you want to be cantankerous. There's only one chapter, so you can call all 13 verses chapters if you want to. I'm going to call them verses. Verse 7, 2 John and verse 7, it says, "For many deceivers have gone out into the world, those who did not acknowledge Yahshua the Christ as coming in the flesh. This is the deceiver and the Antichrist." Now, let me put together these five verses just briefly, and then we'll look at them in more detail. First of all, in Revelation 13:18, we find that it describes the number of the beast as the number of a man. 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verses 3 through 4, talk about the man of lawlessness who exalts himself to the position of God, and that mystery of lawlessness was already at work. 1 John 4:3, we find that the Antichrist was coming and was already at work in the world as well. That the Antichrist, and then we looked at two verses that describe who and what the Antichrist is. Okay, now let's start working backwards now and taking a little bit more in-depth look at each of these scriptures. 1 John, starting with 1 John chapter 2 and verse 22 and 2 John 7, where we find the description of the Antichrist. The Antichrist in most churches today is described from these two verses, or these two passages, just by two ingredients. I want to suggest to you that there are three important ingredients in describing the Antichrist in these two passages. Number one, from 1 John 2 and verse 22. Number one, the Antichrist denies that Yahshua is the Christ, the Messiah. Okay, that's number one description. Number two, according to 2 John verse 7, the Antichrist denies that Yahshua came in the flesh, that the Messiah has come in the flesh. Okay, now those are the two that are usually focused in on, that are usually the description given from these two passages on the Antichrist. But here is one that is equally of importance, if not more importance for today's world and understanding. And it fits in perfectly with the whole title of the series, Know Thine Enemy. Because people do not understand, have not understood, specifically 2 John verse 7, correctly, they do not know their enemy. Most specifically, they don't know who the Antichrist is. They're looking forward to it being this one-man ruler at some time in the future, like John F. Kennedy, who will resurrect from a death wound to the head, literally. But that is not the description given here. This is a very important description in our being able to accurately identify who our enemy is. The third description of the Antichrist from 2 John verse 7 is that it's a plurality described by a singular. Now let's go back to 2 John 7. Most of you have looked at this at one time or another, but just in case it hasn't been clarified before, or for those on the tape who have maybe not heard this, 2 John verse 7, it says, For many what? Deceivers. I want you to say it. Deceivers. It's a plurality of people that it's now describing in the first part of this verse. For many deceivers have gone out into the world, those who did not acknowledge Yahshua the Christ as coming in the flesh. It's talking about a plurality of people who do not acknowledge Yahshua the Christ as coming in the flesh. And then it says, this is the... Say it. Well, what comes... The deceiver and the Antichrist. Singular. The Antichrist is a plurality of people, or a religion of people who neither acknowledge Yahshua as the Christ or as Christ as coming in the flesh. The Antichrist is a plurality described by a singular. It is not this one man future ruler who's going to oppose Christ as one man. It's a plurality of people who are already in existence at that time. Were in existence before John's time and are in existence now. And now I ask you, let's take those three descriptions and who in the world does it describe, both then and today? They deny that Yahshua is the Christ. They deny that Yahshua as the Christ came in the flesh. And they are a plurality of people described as the singular Antichrist. There is one group of people, I don't care whether you want to call me racist, bigot, anti-Semite, you can call me all those names, but it won't change the fact there is one group of people, one religion that fits that bill better than anybody else on the face of this earth. The people known as Jews who practice the religion of Judaism. There is nothing more Antichrist than the Jewish religion. We believe that Yahshua is the Son of God, born of a virgin, came to redeem mankind. The Talmud teaches, which is the basis of the religion of Judaism, teaches that, and I hate to even say it, it teaches that Yahshua is a bastard, born of a prostitute during her menstrual period and worthy to be urinated on and a whole lot more worse things. Now, you can't get more Antichrist than that. That is the Antichrist, the plurality of people described as the singular Antichrist. Now, let me take from there and now compare that also with New Ageism to prove that behind New Ageism as well are the Jewish people. Now, I'm going to share with you right off the bat that there is a whole lot better, there are better quotes to share with you to prove this point of their denial of Yahshua as the Christ than the one I'm going to give you. But there's a reason for my sharing this one with you. John Randolph Price, once again, defines the Antichrist. And here is his description found in the Planetary Commission on page 163. Simply put, he says, quote, any individual or group. Now, I found it very interesting. I didn't catch that at first until I wrote it down this time. He says, any individual or group who denies the divinity of man, end quote. Now, he even recognizes that the Antichrist is a group of people. And, of course, his view of the Antichrist is going to be the exact opposite of the secularist Christian's view of the Antichrist as found in the Bible. And in essence, what he is saying, or interpreted, what he is saying is that since they believe that that man in the flesh is the Christ, then they automatically, by the same reasoning, deny that Yahshua in the flesh is the Christ. It goes without saying. The New Age movement are also in the movement, and again, they've got some dupes or some dopes that are involved in it, but those who are behind it are the Antichrist, who deny that Yahshua is the Christ, came in the flesh. Now, let's backtrack a little bit. Let's go back to John, 1 John chapter 4 and verse 3. I just mentioned here that remember that that verse is the verse that says that the Antichrist is already at work in the world, which takes us back to 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verses 3 through 4 and verse 7, which told us, if you remember, that the mystery of lawlessness was already at work in the world. What is the mystery of lawlessness? The mystery of lawlessness that is already at work in the world is described in verses 3 and 4 as the man of lawlessness displaying himself as being God. Now, not only is Judaism anti-Christ, not only do they not believe that Yahshua is the Christ, came in the flesh, they believe just the opposite as well. They believe that they, as a group of people who do not believe that Yahshua is the Christ, who are the same group of people who believe that they, as a group of people, are the Christ. The man of lawlessness displays himself as being God. Let's prove it by their own quotes. Baruch Levi, and I don't know if you caught this when I first read from his letter, to Karl Marx, but in the very first statement, I tried to even de-emphasize it so you wouldn't catch it initially, but he says these words: the Jewish people as a whole will be its own Messiah, end quote. They believe that they are the Messiah. Now, I didn't know of that quote when I first came to understand what I'm sharing with you, or came to understand the Antichrist, the correct understanding of the Antichrist, which was 3 or 4 years ago. I did not know of this quote. I had been told by others that the Jews believed that. It thrilled me. Understand what I mean when I say thrilled. I'll put quotes around it. But it thrilled me to hear a Jew state it by his own mouth. Now, if you don't believe, you want to say, oh, that was in 1920 that Baruch Levi said that, and he was off the wall. Well, does that make it worthless, the fact that he said it? Well, some people would certainly want to make it that. Well, I personally heard Gary Tesler, who replaced Alan Berg on the KOA talk show initially, say, and you could tell he hated to have it even slip. Boy, he just wanted to pull that statement back in his mind, but he was in the middle of a conversation, and he stated the very same thing. He said that the Jewish people believe that the Jewish people are the Messiah. And you just see him. You can almost hear it. Oh, what did I say? I shouldn't have said that. They don't want it known, but that indeed is what they believe. Let's tie that in. Again, Baruch Levi said, the Jewish people as a whole will be its own Messiah. That should remind you also of something I shared with you from Humanist Manifesto number 2, tenet number 1 in paragraph number 4 in an earlier message. Remember what it said? It said, quote, humans are responsible for what we are or will become. No deity will save us. We must save ourselves, end quote. Fits in, again, fits just perfectly together. Well, if that's not enough, let's go to the elders. Let's go to the protocols. Protocol number 22, article number 4, for example, that says, quote, our authority will be glorious because it will be all-powerful. Excuse me, let me read that again. I don't think I read it right. It says, quote, our authority will be glorious because it will be all-powerful.
It will rule and guide. It will be all-powerful, their authority. That should remind you of another scripture we used in a previous message, Habakkuk 1, 6, and 7, where it talked about the Chaldeans or the Babylonians, where it said, whose justice and authority originate with themselves. Jog that memory. Who are the Babylonians? Who did the Babylonians bring about? Babylon brought about the daughter of Babylon, who is synonymous with who in the scriptures? Edom. Who is found in what today? Modern Jewry. Here he says, our authority, in protocol number 2D, our authority will be glorious because it will be all-powerful, will rule and guide, and then it continues by saying our authority will be the crown of order. A little bit later it says, the aureole of this authority will inspire a mystical bowing of the knee before it and a reverent fear before all the peoples. It starts off by saying that our authority will be all-powerful. Well, I thought that Yahshua said in Matthew 28 and verse 18 that all authority had been given to Him in heaven and on earth. What are they doing? They're claiming to take the throne of God, to be God. By the way, let me just throw this in for extra for those who might not want to believe that Yahshua indeed is God. They claim to be the Messiah. It is the Messiah whom they claim to be. It's His authority. They're claiming to be God and they're claiming to be the Messiah, and thus the Messiah and God are one and the same once again. First of all, they claim to have all authority, and then they say that every knee, to this authority, every knee will bow. Well, I thought Paul said in Philippians chapter 2, verses 9 and 11, that therefore also God highly exalted Him, Yahshua, and bestowed on Him the name which is above every name, that at the name of Yahshua every knee should bow. They're claiming the place of God. They're claiming the place of Yahshua. How does that fit in with New Ageism? I read this quote once before and I said, keep track of it because I wanted to use it again in a new light. And again, this quote, there are certainly better quotes to use, but this one most specifically, there are better quotes to use to prove this point. This quote will do it, but there's something specific in this quote that I really want you to pay attention to again. This is from the book called The Rainbow Bridge. If you remember, it was written by two New Age authors who simply call themselves the Disciples. I can't give you their names. Nonetheless, a very popular New Age book. In it, they describe planet Earth as a network of light composed... Catch this. They describe planet Earth as a network of light composed of interlinking triangle force fields. Link up with these universal forces, they maintain, and you will be one with God. When enough people... And catch the rebuilding of the Tower of Babel in this next phrase. When enough people on earth do link up to this network, they claim the New Age Christ and all His hierarchy of spirits will appear to establish their New Age kingdom. Then the sons of men will be one. End quote. Same goal as the Tower of Babel. What are they claiming to do? They're claiming to become God. And they just out and out claim, and again there are better quotes, but I wanted to use that one for a specific reason. The man of lawlessness displaying himself or themselves as being God. The New Agers do it just as the religion of Judaism does it. Now let's go back to our initial verse in these series of five verses, Revelations 13:18, where it says that the number, 666, the number is that of a man. Keep in mind, the number is that of a man. The mystery. Or the man of lawlessness is already at work, the Antichrist is already at work, and the Antichrist is described as those who neither believe that Yahshua is the Christ or that He has come in the flesh. A plurality described by a singular. Keep all of that in mind. Revelations 13:18, the number is that of a man. Now, I want to suggest to you that with everything else that we've discovered, or that we've seen in the other four verses, that it is Judaism that fits the bill of the Antichrist, that it's Judaism that fits the bill of the man of lawlessness who exalts himself as God, and within that the New Age movement, of course, too. But that since we have seen that it is Judaism that fits the bill in all of these other scriptures, I suggest to you that this mark of the beast that is called, that it says that it is the number of that of a man, must somehow also be found in Judaism. If that mark is the mark of the mark of a man, the mark of the beast, and that is synonymous with the mystery of lawlessness, the mystery, the man of lawlessness, which is synonymous with the Antichrist, which equals Judaism, then that mark must have something to do with the Jews and Judaism. Are you with me on that? Now, I suggest to you I could do a better job at putting this blackboard up. Okay. Let's move it back just a little bit, Hirsch. Yeah, it'll stay up without it. Now, forget about the first two figures, or the figures on each side, but I want to concentrate on the Star of David. I suggest to you that it is in their primary symbol that we can find the mark of the beast. Now, remember that the number of man is 6. The number of the beast, the Antichrist, is 666. Most people understand and recognize 7 is the number for God, 6 is the number for man. I suggest to you that we have the mark of the beast in the Star of David. If you will notice, there are 6 points to the Star of David. Number 6 is that of a man. 666 is that of the Antichrist. So I believe that we not only have 6 points, but we also have 666 within the Star of David, if you want to follow with me in this reasoning. Not only do we have 6 points, we also have 6 triangles. And within the center of the Star of David, we have 6, I'm not sure what you'd call them, but 6 bases. 666. Mm-hmm. Over and over again. I suggest to you. Whoops. Excuse me. Yeah, we're gonna look at that. I suggest to you that the emblem of Judaism today, you can find the number of the beast, and I think we'll establish that by more. But Joe just brought out a very good point. Some people believe. There are people amongst our midst that believe that the Star of David was simply a symbol stolen by the Jews, much the same as the rainbow has been by the New Agers, stolen from God's people and then misused by Judaism today. I suggest to you that there is no biblical indication for that reasoning, for that conclusion. There is nothing in the Bible that would indicate that the Star of David ever belonged to Israel. And one of the reasons that they believe it probably belonged to Israel is because it's not only called the Star of David, it is also called the Seal of Solomon. Okay? And they say, well, if it was the Seal of Solomon, then it must have been Israel's. And if you remember, when we were talking about masonry, I brought up the fact that this is called the Seal of Solomon, and they went on to explain why, and I said, I really doubt that it was ever the Seal of Solomon. I was wrong. It was the Seal of Solomon. But that does not give it Israelite roots. And I'll prove to you why. Turn with me to 2 Kings chapter 11. I believe that we can find the star in the Scriptures, but I do not believe, as you're going to see, that it establishes... Did I say 2 Kings? I meant 1 Kings. 1 Kings chapter 11. I think you will see that it has nothing to do with the roots of Israel, but instead the roots of the foreign gods that Solomon partook of. 1 Kings chapter 11, I want to read verses 1 through 6. It says, Now King Solomon loved many foreign women, along with the daughter of Pharaoh, Moabite, Ammonite, Edomite, Sidonian, and Hittite women, from the nations concerning which Yahweh had said to the sons of Israel, You shall not associate with them, neither shall they associate with you, for they will surely turn your heart away after their gods. Solomon held fast to these in love, and he had 700 wives, princesses, and 300 concubines, and his wives turned his heart away. For it came about, when Solomon was old, the wives turned his heart away from after other gods, and his heart was not wholly devoted to Yahweh his God, as the heart of David his father had been. For Solomon went after Ashtoreth, the goddess of the Sidonians, and after Milcom, the detestable idol of the Ammonites. And Solomon did what was evil in the sight of Yahweh, and did not follow Yahweh fully, as David his father had done. Somebody, of course, is going to come up real question real quickly. Well, where in the world does the Star of David or the Seal of Solomon come through in those 6 verses? Well, if you notice that one of the gods that Solomon fell for as a result of marrying into the forbidden lineage that God had forbidden was the goddess Ashtoreth, the goddess of fertility of the Sidonians. Well, Ashtoreth is synonymous with Astarte. And guess what Astarte means? Star. Astarte. It translates into star. Now, I believe that that is verified in the prophet Amos. Turn to Amos chapter 5. Amos chapter 5 and verse 26. Let's start with verse 25. It says, "Did you present me with sacrifices and grain offerings in the wilderness for 40 years, O house of Israel?" He says, "You also carried along Sekuth," or that could be translated Saturn, or the shrine of Moloch. You also carried along Sekuth and your king, and Keon your images. And Keon or Kewan is Saturn, or stands of. And then it says, "You also carried along Sekuth, your king, and Keon, your images, the star of your gods, which you made for yourselves." Now, notice that they carried along with them their star. And notice also, "the star of your gods, which you made," I like the King James Version, it says, "made to yourselves." Anytime, again, that somebody's involved in idolatry, they're involved in the worship of self. They made those images to themselves. For themselves and to themselves. And one of them was this star that they carried along with them. And I suggest to you that it was this star, the seal of Solomon, that Solomon fell for and that the Israelites of aforetime fell for as well. I do not believe that it was Israel's ever to begin with, that Israel, literal, physical, the real descendants the real Israel, let me put it that way, were the ones who stole it from the pagans as they became idolatrous. I wanted to put that aside because there is no proof in the Scriptures that this symbol ever was associated with Israel in the true worship of God. I believe it is pagan through and through, and you can most easily trace it back to the Jewish Kabbalah, which all occult symbols use. And it's interesting that all occults use this symbol. The New Agers are certainly one that use that symbol, not to maybe a great extent, but at least to some extent. Now, I want to read to you from a book that's called Mystery Mark of the New Age by Tex Mars. I want you to keep in mind that as I read this, now there's some excellent material in here concerning the New Age movement, but as I read this book, I want you to understand that Tex Mars takes the conventional approach to the Antichrist. The Antichrist is this one-man ruler that will soon come down the road. Read from page 39. And listen to what he says. Now, keeping in mind that I am suggesting to you that the Star of David, we can find the number of the beast in it, 666, and that it is somehow associated with this number. Keeping that in mind, listen to what Tex Mars has to write. It's under a little title called The Afterglow. He says, "A growing number of New Agers have already undergone the initiation ceremony and accepted the mark. They almost universally report that although they approach the ceremony with dread and foreboding after it is over, after they have the mark, these extreme feelings of fear magically vanish. They are replaced by feelings of great joy, of warmth, of serenity, and peacefulness. Most report that the newly acquired mark makes them feel unique and special, even chosen." Now, I don't want to center in so much on that paragraph as much as I do in what he quotes from following this. He then quotes from an article entitled Contactee Firsthand, as found in the California UFO, January-February 1987, page 29. I have no way of knowing whether this was supposed to have been an actual experience with this person who was doing the writing, that they actually had supposedly had contact with an unidentified flying object and the inhabitants thereof, or it was just a story. I don't know, but I find it very interesting, for whatever reason, that he quotes from this article. He talks about the New Agers starting to receive the mark. Listen to what is written in this article called Contactee Firsthand. "After the encounter, I discovered that the lines on the palm of my right hand had been altered, and a portion of them now formed a six-pointed star. about an inch in circumference. It terrified me when I first spotted it, for I knew I was no longer looking at my own palm. But as time went on, I learned to accept the changes within my body, and I really felt quite special. Now, he doesn't explain even why he puts that in here. As a matter of fact, as this was all coming together, and some of the material the quotes that I have are obviously coming out of this book. But what I found most interesting was the title of this book, as God started to open my eyes to see some of this, because of some of the things he even writes. Much the same as the light and the glory. Remember how in the light and the glory they read these quotes from our forefathers and their understanding of being Israel, and yet the authors of the light and the glory just couldn't comprehend that we were Israel, and yet they quoted our forefathers saying it. Same thing with this man. This man, the title of the book is The Mystery Mark of the New Age. And he does not understand what he's writing there. He doesn't even explain why it's in there. But he identifies the Star of David being an implant in this situation, in the hand of this person in this story. And it relates it back to the New Agers taking on the mark. Now, it gets more interesting. I believe, again, that the number 666 is that of a man, and it can be found in this symbol to some degree. I'm not saying it's the whole application, but it's there to be found. Now, let's now look more at the New Age aspect of this. Going back to Mystery Mark of the New Age by Tex Mars, I this time want to read from pages 44 and 45. It starts to reveal a little bit more. He talks about, you know, on these two pages, a book entitled The Mark. Okay, and he says the book is one of the most popular New Age sellers, this book called The Mark. And he says, if you'll notice on the left-hand side, there is the circle with the triangle, with the circle with a triangle inside, with a circle inside the triangle. He says, this is the satanic symbol featured prominently on the cover of the New Age book, The Mark, by Morris Nickel. That is the symbol that's on the cover of this book. Okay, that is a prominent New Age symbol, also a prominent occult symbol. He goes on to say, Nickel's teaching, the writer of this book, he says, Nickel's teaching is that the New Age man can only become transformed into a divine being through initiation. Click, click, click. Fits in perfectly with masonry. Through initiation into ancient mysteries. Click, click, click. Masonry. That first originated in Babylon. He doesn't even know what he's writing. He doesn't know that the mark. Now notice that there is the use of the triangle in that mark. Now I want you to take that back and understand that he's saying that it goes back to Babylon. Where does the triangle as a symbol come from? Well, it comes from Babylon, where the Kabbalah originated. And it certainly shouldn't surprise you that the ancient Jewish Kabbalah is being revived, probably should put that in quotes, revived by New Age teachers today. They're reviving the ancient Jewish Kabbalah. Why? Because their symbology, their roots, everything goes back to the Jews, Judaism, and the Kabbalah. Now, this is where I really think it gets interesting. I have this quote written down, but he is the one who quoted it, just so you know just how much he didn't understand of what he was writing. I want to quote from an Alice Bailey in a treatise on cosmic fire. Alice Bailey, by the way, is head of the Lucius Publishing Company. If you remember, I told you that was originally called the Lucifer Publishing Company. They changed the name, obviously, for human relation purposes. But she is now the head of the Lucius Publishing Company, which, without a doubt, is one of the most important organizations in the New Age network. Alice Bailey says this, the number, quote, the number 666 has to do with the triangular balancing. Man, I couldn't believe what I was reading when I read that. The number 666 has to do with triangular balancing. Notice that implies more than one triangle. What do we have in the Star of David? Two triangles perfectly interlinked. Remember that previous quote? Or balanced together. They balance there as they form that symbol of the Star of David. And it goes on. Says the number 666 has to do with triangular balancing. A little bit later, she said, it deals with the greater initiation. End quote. All fits together. Now, You'll notice here, as I've diagrammed out in this diagram, I've got New Age symbols. We start with the triangle within a circle that has a circle within it as one of the major. Triangles are always are very involved in the New Age symbology. Remember in the past, there was also the quote from the New Age writer who said that the Tower of Babel incident can be found in the New Age movement, that there's symbology there that fits, and that he also said that... I lost my train of thought on that. Anyway, the New Age symbols, I've got three New Age symbols. They're all involved with the triangles. The second one being the Star of David, and then the third one. Have you ever seen this third symbol before? It's a fairly common New Age symbol. It's what I'd call almost a starburst, which is made up of four triangles. Now, here is another better picture than what I have drawn here. This is a publication by... New Age, by the New Age people. It's called the Energy of Light. Here is the symbol. You can see the symbol right in here on the inside cover of the book. There is the symbol. Now, I couldn't do it on the chalkboard, but if you notice, that symbol is made up of four triangles. Or, in other words, one Star of David on top of another Star of David. And you can't see it so well with that picture, but if I'll pass, you can see this after we finish up, but you can see it. I outlined one of the Stars of David in red. Very clearly, it is one Star of David on top of another Star of David. And what's interesting is I couldn't do it, but if you'll notice in this picture, it's all almost shaded in. What that is that this configuration in a smaller form is inside of the center of this configuration and then repeated again. In other words, it's two Star of Davids, one on top of another, with the same configuration inside the two, and then repeated again. Now, two Star of Davids. Star of David has 6 points. You've got 6 points and 6 triangles in the Star of David. You've got, when you take that configuration of two Stars of Davids and put that same configuration inside of it, and then repeat it again, how many Stars of Davids do you come up with? 6 Stars of Davids. 6 Stars of Davids that have 6 points. If you take 6 Stars of Davids times 6 points, you come up with how many points? 36. 36 divided by 6 equals 6. 6, 6, 6. 6, 6, 6. 6, 6, 6. You always come up with the number 6. I don't know about you, but I found that tremendously interesting that even in the symbology. Remember when we were talking about masonry, how even the compass and triangle of the Masons and their symbology, that I said I was going to share it with you that you can take it for what it's worth, but you can certainly find the Star of David within it. And then I found a quote that where they admitted that it was the Star of David. It all fits together. Here, she says, Alice Bailey says that the number 666 has to do with triangular balancing. We have triangular balancing in this symbol, very well-known New Age symbol, as well as in the Star of David. And you keep coming up with 666. Now, I believe there's more to come up with regarding all of this, but I certainly think that there's evidence there. I think it has to be found. The number of the beast has to be found somehow linked in with Judaism. And New Ageism, as an extension, not only of humanism, but of Judaism, would also show the very same thing. And they just about out and out admit it. That it has to do, the 666 has to do with triangular balancing. Well, I'm running out of time. Let me sum up the New Age movement as we've discussed it in the last three messages. Very simply put, it's an ancient religion whose intent is a one world order or one world government to be established through the annihilation of Christianity. It's a religious movement that obviously is clearly controlled by the Antichrist forces of Judaism. Now, we've taken three messages to get to that point, but I think it was probably worth it, valuable information, and I think all of that certainly establishes all that I just shared with you. I want to end with a particular verse. I had 2 Peter 3, verses 17 and 18 down. Don't turn to that. I'm not going to use that. As I was sitting back in the first hour, I decided there was another verse that came to my mind that I thought certainly fits the situation much better. Again, as we see the forces that are arrayed against us, It's easy for us to become discouraged. It's easy for people to say, man, you preach nothing but negativism. And not to realize how positive a message that this is, that the enemy has to be described and identified, or we'll never be able to battle him adequately or successfully. If you want to talk about being negative, let us not identify the enemy and thus not know who to battle and lose the fight. That's negative. We need to identify who he is, and we need to identify what he's about, no matter what they may want to call us. And in that light, this verse came to mind. I didn't even have time to look it up. It's, I believe, in 1 Corinthians, either chapter 2 or chapter 4. It's a verse I quote almost every morning. It's a verse that says, but thanks be to God. And we need to keep this in mind as we see these forces arrayed against us. It says, but thanks be to God, who always leads us in his triumph. I don't have to rely on my own power. But thanks be to God who always leads us in his triumph in the Christ, and he manifests the sweet aroma of the knowledge of him through us in every place. I count that as a great privilege of knowing a God who has chosen me to lead me in the triumph of his Son that was won at the cross. The victory has been won. Let's stand tall. Let's stand. Let's be soldiers of the cross and take forth this battle and alert others to the danger that lies before them as the enemies of Christ are out to destroy him and us. Let's stand and we'll close in prayer. Heavenly Father, I'm very thankful that you've led me to the material, led me to this series of messages, Father, and then the material, Father, that needed to be shared within it. Pray that you continue to guide, Father, in any future messages in this regards, Father, any down the road even that we may add to it. I'm thankful for the material, and knowing, Lord, that it's material that certainly needs to be taken to the people. Lord, the general populace seems to be so ignorant, Father, of the fact that they're even in a war. I pray that somehow you would alert them, Father, that they could prepare themselves, Father, against the attacks of the enemy, and that they can then even prepare others so that they can be prepared as well. Thankful, Father, that we don't have to be discouraged, but that we can know that the plans of the enemy will certainly be foiled, and that the victory is already ours in your Son. We're thankful, Father, for his death and his burial and resurrection, and that as he conquered death, he conquered all other enemies on our behalf. We praise you, and we lift this message and this series up to you once again to be used in preparing people for the coming kingdom of your Son. We praise you and glorify you in Yahshua the Messiah. Amen.